Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel tennis podcast. The U.S. Open is now behind us, and we have a theme podcast this week, Battle of the Sexes. This, of course, is the Billie Jean King movie. It premieres on the 22nd nationwide. It opened during the U.S. Open, actually, at Telluride Film Festival. And in conjunction with the U.S. Open, there was a big publicity push. A number of us were able to interview some of the principals, Emma Stone and Billie Jean King among them. Also had a chance to talk with Elizabeth Shue, sort of. Jamie Lasanti, you were too young for this. You know what it felt a lot like? Parent-teacher conferences. You just sort of went from one station to the next. Alan Cumming was in position A, and Billie Jean King was in position B. But I did a Q&A with Billie Jean and Emma Stone, a conversation, an excerpt of which runs in Sports Illustrated and online this week. So the first podcast we'll do is the audio outtakes from that interview. Interesting conversation. Again, obviously, Emma Stone plays Billie Jean King in this movie. I have to say, too, sidebar, Jamie Lasanti, have you seen the movie?
No.
Do. It's quite good. It's way better than you would have any reason to expect it to be. There's some really nice touches. I'd say it's not really a sports movie per se. There's no great suspense. We all know who wins the big game, but they did a really nice job with it. It's not a documentary. I mean, it's a movie. So the love scene, the whole relationship between Billie Jean and Marilyn Barnett is played up more than I think you will see it in books and other accountings. But I think they did a really nice job with the 70s, sort of the 70s verisimilitude, but they also did the cameo steal the show. Fred Armisen and who's the other guy? I'm blanking on his name. Who's the other? Not Bill Hader. Who's the other guy from Saturday Night Live? Great cameos. So I'm going to remember his name. He plays a disc jockey in this. But anyway, let's do here's how we're going to do this. First, are the outtakes from Billie Jean and Emma Stone talking to them together. Interesting dynamic. Obviously, Billie Jean is a sort of expressive personality, and I've known her forever. I'd never met Emma Stone before. And then we talked to the directors, who I liked a great deal, Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, two directors. I was saying to them, two directors usually means one director starts and is under contract and gets fired, and the next one has to come and take over, but they're both under contract. That was not the case. Jonathan and Valerie are a husband-wife team. They did Little Miss Sunshine. They also got their start in videos. We talk a bit about that. Again, Jamie, you are way too young for this. You ever see Smashing Pumpkins Tonight Tonight?
No.
Great video. Plays off a silent movie. They did that. So they got their start in videos,
You're
and then they moved on to cinema.
References.
We're both revealing our age here. But anyway, so let's do this. Let's start with Billie Jean and Emma Stone. This is sort of a fun conversation. This actually was right before the women's final. So this was on Saturday. I guess that would have been September 9th at the in the Players' Garden of the U.S. Open. So here were the outtakes. You can read a transcript on SI.com and in the magazine. Billie Jean and Emma Stone. All right, you start, Billie Jean. How'd you do?
She did great. Are you kidding? I'll tell you, okay. For all of us who've seen tennis movies in our lifetime, I think the bar's been pretty low. But this one, I think they did a great job on the tennis, which was, I think, always one of the challenges when we do our sport, because it's such a difficult sport and it takes so many years. And I was really impressed.
You saw yourself in her rendering.
Her mannerisms, her voice, it's eerie. I told you, when they announced the match at, is it Midtown? Not Midtown, Town Tennis. Her voice, if I closed my eyes, I would have thought it was me. I'm not kidding. I was like scary. It was, she got her, how she captures the voice. I don't know how she did it.
What is this like for you, Emma? what is this like when you're playing someone who, you know, it's not Kirsten Dunst and Marie Antoinette. I mean, you're playing someone who is still here and telling stories, but you're playing her 40 some odd years ago. What is it like playing a character like that?
It's very interesting. I mean, I think the pressure is obviously immense, because I wanted to live up to Billie Jean, which no one ever can. So I had to let myself off the hook for that. But just getting to know about her life and her story and what makes her was just, it was an honor.
How'd you do that?
A lot of research. I talked to Billie Jean a little bit, but it was mostly watching footage from the time, reading interviews from the time, reading about basically everything before the age of 29, so that I could try to create like a capsule of this human being in this in this point in her life without the sort of circumspect, obviously, and retrospect that she has now.
Your approach for this role, do you say, I know that match, I know all about that, or did you say, wait a second, I need to...
I don't want to learn.
Her mother knew about it. Come on, John. This is so cute. Her mom saw the match.
Yeah, it was. I had a lot to learn. And it was incredible to learn. And what's so exciting also to me is that, you know, being, I'm about to turn 29, and I'm, you know, about to be the
age
that Billie Jean was in this. And it's just so exciting to think that my generation is going to get to see this story in a brand new way and understand the shoulders on which we stand. It's very important.
What is this like for you? I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to see my life being portrayed by another person. How did you prepare for this?
I don't think you can, but I think Emma was really brave because I'm still alive. And I think that has to be so much more pressure on someone. So I was trying to think what she must be going through. And I thought, well, how lucky am I that they're even going to do a movie on the Battle of the Sexes, because it does talk about all the things that I truly care about, you know, equality, and Title IX was the year before. All these things were happening, the women's movement, Vietnam was calming down, Watergate was heating up, Roe versus Wade. I mean, it goes on and on what was going on. It was very tumultuous times, but an opportunity also at that time to move forward, to move the needle forward. And I hope that this movie will, you know, be relevant, and that we're going to have a lot of college kids and high school kids. We're going to try to have dialogue around it and try to keep pushing forward with this idea of equal pay for equal work. And just really try to move in every way, you know, respect and authenticity, to move it forward. Equality, it's just for all, it's just everyone.
There's a line from the movie where the women are playing for a $7,000 purse. You come here, purse at the U.S. Open's $25 million at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center. I want to ask both of you, I mean, I can only imagine what it's like for you, but what is it like having played this role and seeing the fruits of this?
It's unbelievable. I mean, this is my first time at the U.S. Open. This is my first time in this world, in this major of a way. And so I'm just, you know, I'm pretty stunned to see all of it. And it's just incredible.
Where are you between this is
how you
a
feel?
Huge try? Yeah, how do you feel exactly?
About what? About the prize money or Emma or what?
How do you feel about in this movie in which you're portrayed, the women are scratching and clawing for a $7,000 purse, and you come out here at a tennis center named in your honor where the winner of the U.S. Open is going to make up of $4 million.
Well, it really makes me happy, but it makes all of us happy that we're from my generation, because our generation did it. The original nine, which is really exciting because the original nine are in the movie, and the, you know, Rosie Casals and Val Ziegenfuss and Nancy Ritchie and, you know, all these people are in it. And that's the only thing I asked the directors, please put the original nine in it somehow. And you know, we remember when we signed that $1 contract, and then later did the WTA. Our dream was that any girl born in the world would have a place to compete, because they were dropping tournaments. I don't think people realize they were dropping all the women's tournaments, so we were gonna not even have a place to compete. So we wanted a place to compete, to be appreciated for their accomplishments and not just their looks. Because if you listen to Howard Cosell when I walk in, he didn't once talk about my accomplishments. He talked about my looks. Oh, if you do this, take her glasses, she could go to Hollywood. And then the third thing is to make a living, because we used to make $14 a day. So we were very clear on what we wanted when we started this, what we wanted for the future generation. So I love it. We love it when we talk about it, because they're living our dream. They are living our goal and our dream now. So when they get the big check, what are they getting this year?
It's almost $4 million.
So I think it's great. Now, we just want a couple percentages. No, I'm kidding.
But you mentioned that Howard Cosell talked about your looks when you took the
course. That's all I talked about.
I go on your IMDb page. What does it say? Husky voice, blonde hair.
Yeah, it's always about our looks.
Where are we in this, I don't want to say race, where are we in this journey?
Oh, I'd like you to answer that.
Well, I think if you look at traditional media, 95% of media is still controlled by men, and it was in my day, and we need that to be more 50-50 and reflect America, especially with different cultures and all that. We don't have it still. So we were just talking today, most of the people we're going to be speaking with, you know, we have a big itinerary and everything, but is that a lot of them are women, and when we were first playing, I was talking to men all the time. I went into a conference after a match every night, especially on the indoor tour, the Virginia Slims tour, and there would be all men in the room, which was easy for me. I grew up with my younger brother who played professional baseball. My dad's a jock. I mean, I grew up with two guys, so I got it. It's really easy for me. But I thought to myself, boy, if I was a tennis player that didn't grow up with men in my life like that, I think it'd be a lot harder than them. It was easy on me, but I got along great with them, so it really helped. But there were no women when we'd come in, no women that were in the news at all, not on TV or in print. So I used to think about it. It'd be nice if we had more variety and all that.
Well, I was going to ask you, I mean, some of your colleagues, probably most notably Jennifer Lawrence, have talked about equal pay in Hollywood. Did that have resonance for you while you shot this?
I mean, I think equal pay in general has resonance for hopefully most people, certainly for women, because women are on the receiving end of less pay. So, of course, I mean, we're discussing the battle of the sexes, the beginning of the WTA, you know, it was just like, we were talking about it so often and thinking about it so often. It's incredible to be, telling a story that takes place 44 years ago. A lot has changed, clearly, what you were talking about today, prize money and all of that, but a lot hasn't, too, across our nation, you know, there's so much that we still have so far to go. So to be reminding people of what has, you know, occurred in history and how far we need to push is incredibly exciting.
It was hard to watch this movie, I thought, and not see this through the prism of today's political climate. I mean, I don't know when I suspect you were shooting this when it was still possible we were going to have a female president.
Ago. Yeah, it was, right? Before the election, right?
Yeah, almost a year and a half ago, yeah.
Yeah, a year and a half ago, yeah. Michonne, right?
How did that inform things?
I think in one way, because we don't, it's just another this battle of the sexes is another reminder we have a long way to go still.
Yeah.
You know, we have a long way to go. Baby used to be our slogan. Well, we got rid of the baby at least. And we've got a long way to go still, and we do. And there's so many battles, and every single generation has to win it over again. You know, Coretta Scott King talks about how every generation has to win freedom every time. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with equality. Freedom is a big part of equality. So it really resonates with me when I read her quote about each generation has to start over winning freedom, you know, and earning it and getting it back. So I think we're right in that middle again, that area. We just have to keep moving forward. But it's up to the younger ones, you know, Emma's age and even younger, the Z Gen and beyond, and babies that aren't even born yet, that they have to keep doing this. It's the right thing to do. You know, it's not just about you, it's about everyone. And we have to teach our children respect for each other and get rid of bullying, and that semantics are powerful. Be kind, be good. I know it sounds maybe goody two shoes, but it really works.
The wheels are turning. Tell me about this. This is a wealth, this is a treasure, this is a wealth of stories, but you also want to render this in your own, you want to put your own interpretation on this role. How did you sort of gauge the distance?
I don't know that it was, I don't think it was putting my own, my intention definitely wasn't to put my own interpretation on it, but it did quickly need to become capturing the essence rather than any type of impression or anything like that. It was important, the physicality in her voice obviously was very important to me because they're definitive, but in terms of her spirit, I knew that I was only able to do the essence because, again, you can't live up to Billie Jean King.
You know, when people ask me about the movie, they said, "What do you think?" And Emma just used the word essence, and I always say they've captured the essence, and that's all I would ever ask for. It's a movie. It's not a documentary.
I was going to say, you keep saying movie. We're distinguishing this from a documentary.
Yeah, because people keep thinking, oh, what if it isn't accurate? What if it isn't this? Forget all that. Did you capture the essence of the moment and the people of that moment? And they did. Every single actor was... I mean, I knew all these characters.
Sure.
I don't know how they do it, but they did it. I mean, Rosie,
Alan Cumming had too much hair.
That's true.
How did... I was like... I felt like I was watching Michael Scott with a forehead. You ended up, in the end, having this nice relationship with Bobby. How did you come to perceive Bobby?
Well, I mean, I think Steve played him so beautifully, and with such complexity that it was very easy to feel sympathetic toward Bobby. It was easy to understand that he had a lot of his own, you know, personal struggles, but he also was a great player. And Billie Jean really outlined how much respect she had for him and how much she studied him and was inspired by him, and that's why she beat him. So I think just going into it knowing that, it was easy to find him funny, and also watching, you know, footage of all of the hoopla surrounding the Battle of the Sexes. You know, Billie Jean so easily laughs with him or sort of, you know, just doesn't entertain isn't threatened by the nonsense and can see that it's showmanship. And so I think that kind of a confidence and stance was really wonderful to get to sort of slip into, because it, you know, everyone's sort of another step in the fight to equality. And no matter how buffoonish they may be.
But I like entertainment, so it's easy.
But yeah, you like it.
I love entertainment.
Yeah.
We're there for. It's not about it. It's about the people. Right. It's very simple, actually. Yeah.
Right, too. I mean, I saw tennis in this a few ways. First of all, it's like a doubles team, right? It's like a shotgun partnership versus someone you play with. Does it help to have worked with your co-star before?
Oh, yeah, but we only had maybe one scene,
I was
two
gonna say,
scenes
there wasn't
together
a lot of
Stupid
scenes
Love,
together.
And then we only had one or two scenes together in this
really?
Movie, too. Yeah, I mean, because the stories are being told sort of simultaneously, so. But I love him. I think he's such an incredible actor, and so I was very excited.
So in tennis, player wins a major, right? They win this event for the first, and it totally recasts them. They get a different locker room sometimes. It puts them in a different light. How is winning? I mean, this is the first film you've done since winning an Oscar. How has that changed things?
Not much. I've got the same goals, same outlook. I'm very grateful. It was a really fun night and such an honor.
What are the goals?
Oh, just to, you know, take my work seriously, but not myself seriously. That's pretty much my whole
life. Yeah, but I love the fact that she talks about growing and learning and all the right things. You know, I think that's the way Emma's going to be her whole life. She's a hard worker. She wants to do a great job as an actor. She's wanted to be an actor since she was six. I think it's like a player saying, I want to be number one at 11, but she was six, even way ahead of me. And, you know, and then she tells her parents we need to go to LA, and she does this whole PowerPoint when she was 15. I mean, she was very focused from a very early age, what she really wanted. So, I mean, she really works hard. I mean, it's like an athlete. You know how hard you really have to always keep working and keep being challenged.
What happens as an athlete when you win something like this? What happens to you just after?
Well, each person's different, but for me, I was already thinking about the next thing. But
that's a great question.
But I think what was going on around me at the time, around everyone, we didn't have the time or the capacity to have a chance to really enjoy our victories because there's so much going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always meetings. I'm always thinking, oh, we got another meeting. I'm only observing it. Oh, I got to have a meeting with the players, and you know, and I never really ever had a chance to just chill. And looking back, I personally should have enjoyed my victories more. I did not enjoy them.
But it's so hard to know that in the moment.
But it's a very fleeting moment. I've asked her about the same thing about me once the movie's over. It's
but
very
that's
fleeting.
The best. This is why it's good not to talk to her before you play her 29, is that she'd tell you, I should have enjoyed my victories more. And then you go, can't enjoy the victory. Exactly. It's got to just happen organically. But it is hard in the moment. It's so hard to be, that age and in the middle of all of this, you know,
28
stuff.
Class, not very,
oh, God,
not
it's
very
a crazy
old.
Time.
Well, that's what I thought. I mean,
it's a crazy time.
That's what
it
I kept
mentally.
Seeing.
I think you're supposed to be so grown up by now.
No,
you're
no,
still
no,
growing
you're not.
Up so
Don't,
much.
You were never grown up.
No, that's true.
But in your 20s, I think when you find out who you are a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And then in your 30s, you start to get, okay. Like when you're choosing another human being to live with, or
oh, I can't wait!
To
I can't wait. 30s, it gets me, calms down a little bit.
30 calms down. Oh. You told her that?
Does it?
No,
your 30s calms down.
But I think you know yourself better.
You know yourself better.
I think
like
you start
that.
To know yourself better in your 30s. But that's everyone's different on that journey and in the different timing. Some people know themselves in high school. You know, they really do.
What I mean, you said it's not a documentary. I thought, I mean, in the retelling, the love interest, you and Marilyn is something that I hadn't heard in that level of detail. Were you comfortable with that? And I also wanted to know.
Comfortable with the scenes or comfortable? I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable in the movie at all. I'm not comfortable, period. I'm very uncomfortable.
You have seen it.
I'm full of pain. I'm full of joy. I'm full of retrospect. I'm full of, did it come out the way I wanted eventually? I mean.
What's your answer?
I think. I'm one of the luckiest people in the world, yeah. I've got lucky.
But I kept thinking, I wonder what...
It's horrible to watch.
Why do you say that?
It's just difficult. It's hard. It brings back all these memories, man. It is stuff.
But it was such a triumph.
It's tough stuff.
Right, right.
It's tough stuff. We're still not winning. I mean, LGBTQ, we're not there yet.
Look, that's what I wanted to ask you, in the military.
Look, I mean, it just goes on and on. You know what I am really fortunate that I met Renee Richards in 1977. That helped change my life to understand transgenders. And, you know, I don't think I've talked to him about this yet, but just to have her in
you
my life, and she's now my ophthalmologist. And I've talked to you, but not in great detail.
Yeah, yeah.
But just to spend, you know, time with her before. I mean, the women were irate. They didn't want her to play on the tour. And I said, just calm down. I'll come back, talk to doctors, went and met with Renee and listened to her for 4 hours. And, you know, I just loved her after listening to her. And then I said, I went back and had to tell the women, well, she's playing.
Right.
And they're going, oh, what are we going to do? The shower room, the locker room. And I said, all right, let's just see what happens. Let's give her a month. After less than 1 week, the women went, she's the
I heard a little bit about this when I first met Billie Jean.
But that was amazing journey and how that even evolved and having a greater understanding of people that I wouldn't understand otherwise.
But I kept thinking, holy hell, if you lost this match for some reason,
I also thought if
this Marilyn story is as prominent as it was in the film, that takes the narrative in a very different direction too.
Valerie Ferris and Jonathan Dayton, the directors who had the final say, I thought it was brilliant the way they did it. Even with that scene where Larry's going this way and Marilyn's going that way around.
Yeah,
like,
yeah right.
Yeah,
right,
I mean, but just the complexities in Bobby's life and my life, and I think they did a great job. Is it exactly accurate chronologically? No, but that's not what a movie's about. It's a biopic. It's a sliver of time and getting the essence of it to me that's what it's about. You're the actor, you can tell me what do you think it's supposed to be.
I think what inspired me so much about this story and playing her in this time was that I have such a knack for perfectionism. I want to get all my ducks in a row before I before I say something, or I, you know, it's so funny that she says that I'm eloquent, because my biggest thing is, oh, I don't know how to say anything. I never get my point across the way I mean to. I mean, I say it all wrong. No,
it's
your own mental stuff.
No, but I'm just telling you,
And so I, one of the great things about this was the idea that you can be figuring out who you are. You can be making quote unquote mistakes. They're not mistakes, but you know what I mean. You can be doing things that you think you shouldn't be doing, or so worried, or not getting enough sleep, or, you know, losing when you should be winning, or winning when you don't know how it even happened because you weren't in your body, you know, all of these different things. And you can still affect change in the world. You do not have to be perfect to be great. And that is so inspiring to me about Billie Jean in general, but also just Billie Jean in this time period struggling through that. I think that message of the film, what I think Simon Beaufoy, our writer, and John and Val, the directors, wanting to tell that part of the story, the personal parts of the story, where that's why it's so inspiring. You can go out there, you can be an activist, you can speak for what you know is right and true, and you don't have to have it all figured out, but you can be figuring it out and still do great things.
But you're always figuring out life. Even at always 74 soon.
Of course.
You should be 20.
I was going to say, don't give her false...
We have the same month of birthdays.
No fake news.
I love that. We have the same month of
birthdays. We're both November.
You're the same Jane.
She's really an Emily Jane.
Emily Jean and Billie Jean.
So it's hysterical.
November girls.
I don't want to... She'll take this one because I knew she would.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time seeing this outside this political prison, whether it's Title IX, Betsy DeVos, whether it's you shot this at a very different time politically, you think it helps the movie, or do you think it complicates the movie?
I think it's both.
It's hard to detach it.
I think it's both, but I don't know. Ask him. She's what a young woman. Because you're our future, girl. That's why you're now in the future more than I am. And my job is to pass the baton to you. So now I just passed it. You're in a relay race.
To be honest,
I think you've been speaking out a lot.
Well, I think that...
Have you been listening to some of her quotes?
Well, oh, God.
You've been
on the spot. I'm just going to
clam
right up.
No, you've spoken up.
She's the best coach in the world.
She teed you up. Exactly. Pressure of the privilege.
I think, you know, this is a true... The battle of sexes is a true story. Whatever the outcome had been of the election, this still would be the story. This still is what happened. This is what happened 44 years ago. So how that's reflected now through this prism is... You know,
it's going to be each person's take on
exactly.
it anyway.
It's
you know, each person. If you're a Republican, you're going to think one way. If you're a Democrat, if you're an independent, if you're Green Party,
we're at a moment that maybe we weren't when you were filming.
Right, a smart, competent, respectful, talented woman beat this man.
Okay, let me say one thing. One thing I am a huge
in the battle of the sexes.
The one thing my brother and I were taught is that never ever. Take anything for granted and never think something's over until it's over. Okay? So in tennis, and I was screaming at people, actually screaming, not kind of like, well, not screaming, but being very strong about it. Would you guys stop talking about Hillary winning? It's until she's shaking hands at the net and she's won, it's never, ever over. I mean, athletes understand this better than anyone. It could be match point. You can have the ball on the strings and miss it and not end up winning that match, okay? I mean, Federer had his chances the other night. We have lived it day in and day out. And if we don't use that lesson that we learned on the court, off the court, we're crazy. It's not over until you're shaking hands at the net. And I am such a believer in that. And never, ever underestimate your opponent. Ever. And my dad taught Randy and me that. And what did Bobby say when he jumped the net? I underestimated you. And my dad and mom happened to be at this match because they hardly ever went to tennis at all. Ever.
Didn't you say to Bobby, we did it, didn't we?
He told me we didn't it? Because I kept trying to tell him it's about history, not about money. It's about social change. Bobby, this is very important. Historically, how about that money, honey? You know, he's all about money. And up to his dying day, I'm sure. But we both told each other we love each other. I said, I love you. And he said, I love you too. And he said, I think we did make a difference, didn't we? Because I told him we can make a difference. He didn't understand any of that until he had perspective. And that's why if you were playing Bobby, you wouldn't have talked to him either. No, you wouldn't have, because it would have been a very different situation.
What did you learn about tennis?
What did I learn about tennis? That it is hard, beyond hard, so difficult, it's crazy. You've got only yourself to rely on out there. There's no team with you. I mean, there is a team in some, you know, in some respects, but not in, obviously, when you're playing singles. And it is incredibly mentally challenging. The sports psychology that I was reading about, or visualization, was so beneficial, because you understand that you're alone up there. But the nice thing that was comparable for me, and Billie Jean said early on, it's like dancing out on the court, but it's also like acting. It's also like, you know, having a scene partner and going back and forth with each other. So if I could use my prism, you know, to understand the kind of intensity, it was
it's so much alike.
The lessons from this role, you can, and from this engagement, you'll think.
No, but like when I coach,
in my job every day.
Yeah, but when I coach, I said the actors always talk about act as if, and I remember telling Lindsay Davenport when she was on the Fed Cup team, act as if, even if you don't feel it, act as if, keep acting, because then you'll become it. If you keep doing it enough, you'll become it. Now I don't know if they say that, but I know they say act as if.
Yeah,
but I know for me personally,
fake it till you make it.
Yeah, fake it till you make it. I said you have to get in that frame of mind. You have to think you can win. You have to stand up straight. You have to think strong. You have your body language is so important.
You have to think you can play Billie Jean King.
Look at the risk you took. Because I am alive. I think if someone's not alive, I would think it's easier. They can't come back at you. I really admire her for saying, okay, I'm going to do this. You know. Billy's still alive, I'm just going to go for it, which I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, and I was like, wow, okay.
Can I tell you, this rapport is like the ultimate validation that you you nailed it.
She got it right, man.
Exactly.
Everyone did, but she, I mean,
I feel like you guys are like, I told you this.
What?
It's like you're doing PR in 1973, and you're going from the local radio station now to
to
the car dealer to laying down the court.
Yeah, totally. We were in the car dealers,
it's a little different scale here.
A little bit of scale, but it's still all the same. It really is.
It's a great film.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
That was fun.
That was great.
All right, fun conversation. That was Billie Jean King and Emma Stone. I think you got a sense of the dynamic between the two of them. Billie Jean, a mentor to all. Billie Jean King, Jamie Lasanti, is one of these people we will be telling our grandkids about, an American treasure, and she's still going strong. All right, let's transition. So after Billie Jean and Emma Stone, I had a chance to sit down with the directors. Again, this is Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris. They're a husband-wife team. They are delightful. They came, I think they talk about this. They came fairly late in the game. They're not huge tennis fans or anything like that, but they really, I think, added a lot to this. And you can see some of the touches. You can see that they got their start with videos. I think some of the filmmaking suggests that. You could also see that there's a sweetness that they had. You ever see Little Miss Sunshine?
Yeah, I was going to say.
All right, we got that. Finally, a reference. All right. We love
Little.
The
movie, like, look of the movie is very similar. From what I've seen.
Yeah,
in the trailer.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's really accurate. Kind of a different kind of movie, but it's really there is an emotional strain. This is much more. I don't necessarily think of this as a sports movie per se. But I think you're right, and I think they really nailed some of the 30s atmospherics, and they were awesome. I love talking to them. Unfortunately, Sloane Stephens and Madison Keys were about to take the court, so we had to disperse. But these are the kind of people like. You want to be friends with. Anyway, so that was, you heard Billie Jean and Emma Stone. Let's get talking with Jonathan Dayton and his wife, Valerie Faris.
You know what the most trite question you can ask in this situation is? What made you want to do this? But I'm genuinely curious. Maybe not the most obvious choice. What made you want to do this movie?
Lots of things. I mean, I guess the basic attraction was that there was a lot about Billie Jean's personal story that we didn't know that was going on during the time of this match. Like we knew about the match, we were alive when it happened, but her story and her personal struggles at that time were really the story that hadn't been told and what we were interested in sort of exploring and presenting.
The deeper we got into it, we also realized that Bobby Riggs had his own, you know, private drama that we could show.
And there's an amazing cast of characters in this movie. I think that in addition to Billie Jean and Bobby's story, Ted Tinling and Gladys Heldman, who are larger than life, fascinating characters and you know, deserve movies of their own. And, you know, so that was, I think, it was such a rich story full of incredible characters. And
Do you remember watching the match?
I didn't watch it.
We didn't watch a
lot
of TV in my
house.
But I remember Bobby Riggs being on the cover of Time magazine, and that meant a lot. That showed you how big this was.
Right. When do you get into this process?
We come in very early, and you know, we spent a year on the script, just shaping
it. We read it in February of 2015. We met with Emma in like March, and then we had to wait a little bit because she went, La La Land came together. And,
heard of it.
Yeah, so we waited for her to train for that, shoot that, and then train for our movie. So it was a total of about, I guess, a little over a year of working on the script and developing it while Emma was off doing La La Land.
What is that like when she comes back from this? I mean, she hadn't won an Academy Award, but
finishing,
you know, triumphant
Emma,
movie.
Yeah.
There are very few actors like Emma. You know, when she commits to something, she gives it everything. And she had to completely transform her body. On La La Land, she was in shape, but she was tiny.
Rail thin.
So she worked with the guy who trains Matt Damon for the Bourne movies. So she worked with an action hero trainer to, like, add
13
muscle.
13 pounds of muscle. And she ate like a horse. And, you know, I mean, she's hard for her to keep weight on. And the whole time we were shooting, we ended up shooting the tennis match last. So that's when she wanted to look the most buff.
But she'd be doing push-ups and
trying to stay
on the set.
Keep her biceps, you know, pumped. But she works.
And this was when?
This was, we shot in April of 2016 for 35 days.
So my loaded question is, I watched this And I think it's hard to see this outside the prism of, hey, a woman might be our first president. And,
oh,
hey, there's
I know.
A...
I know. Well, I know. When we made it, we had no idea who would be president. And, you know, in fact, we imagined that it might be Hillary, and Hillary's good friends with Billie Jean, so... You know, it's quite a different world than the world we were in when we made it. But
it didn't really change the story that we were telling. You know, we didn't change anything based on the world being turned inside out.
The end of democracy didn't.
Yeah.
No.
But I think it'll be interesting to see how audiences embrace the film now. You know, we didn't want it to be polarizing. I mean, it obviously has an opinion, but it was important to us that it focus on the personal story and that the politics come from that.
Yeah.
What are sort of your process for, I don't know, what's the calculus for documentary versus making a movie? I mean, obviously, we expect some license, and this is not, you're not documentarians, but where sort of the line is.
Yeah, exactly. Do you take? And well, the script did some of that in terms of collapsing the time period. You know, certain events take place over 3 years' time. We put them into a much tighter time frame, but we didn't take a lot of license. I mean,
we went the opposite direction. I mean, we really sought to get as much real
information,
so we have the real Howard Cosell and Jack Kramer's rebuttal during the broadcast.
And Eric Severide saying, you know, Bobby Riggs thinks, you know, women are lousy and they shouldn't be allowed on the court. You know, it was much more powerful to us to try to use those real moments to kind of place you in those times. But, you know, where we take license is... The most important thing was to try to get the truth of her personal journey and her struggle. And as long as we're being true to that, then we take license, you know, in terms of how to tell that story.
It's, you see these lists of 100 best sports movies. They're seldom tennis on that list.
No, we studied other tennis movies and we looked at sports movies. And, you know, without question, we are a sports movie, among other things.
You think?
I think so. Yeah. I think we're gonna.
I mean, it
you know,
ends with
I want to enter that.
Right.
It's not a pure sports movie, but
we,
I feel
we
like
a part love story, part sports movie.
So I want to. I want to be on that list if we can. I'm not saying the top 10, but I.
And also, you know, it was challenging because the match was fairly one-sided, and it wasn't exactly
no, it wasn't
a
like
dramatic.
Teaming with drama.
Yeah, it wasn't down to the last set. So. It was, we had to take some license with how to make that match dramatic. Yeah,
Matt McEnroy says there's no, it's just tennis is too hard to fake athletically.
No, it is. So that's why we had real pros players. Playing.
The, can I ask you about your process?
Yeah.
Sure.
Ever see Other People's Money? Catherine Keener and or no no people with
oh, no,
friends with
friends, friends with money,
money.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, friends
Nicole.
With money. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. She's a friend of ours.
Yeah. I how do you guys work together? How does that?
We get that question a lot.
No, but you know what? Honestly, see two directors and you assume, oh, someone came in and polished it, and their agent made sure their name stayed on the credits. That's not the case.
No. We've done everything together since college. We've only made movies together and films
together. And we're married
together.
And we have kids, so.
But, which is a lot like directing. Parenting is a lot like directing. If you can do that with someone else, then you can probably direct with them.
Directing is easier because the actors listen to you. The crews or the kids don't always.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, we both do everything, and you know, it's a constant dialogue. And so, you know, it's nice to be able to explore a subject in a safe environment, just the two of us, and then you go to set. And we always have to have a plan.
We probably have. Spend more time in prep, you know, than maybe a single director would, because we need to be on the same page. So we, you know, we explore the material together, we act it out sometimes, we, you know, we really have to be, we have to kind of have experienced the movie, the two of us, before we go to shoot it.
So how are these, you know...
It's like practicing.
Well, my opinion, with any collaboration, you've got this... creative differences, and sometimes
sometimes we'll disagree.
We do argue.
And
at home, usually.
Yeah. And
not on the set.
But we have kind of a rule that whoever's most passionate wins. And, you know, and usually it's pretty clear that someone, and it's usually Valerie, who's right.
I won't ask whether that extends beyond your creative differences. That's a good rule to live by. But you figured out how to...
You know, when we got married, the guy who married us said, you should never go to bed angry. And we kind of have that rule that you have to reset every night. And so whatever's going on...
You can't hold a grudge for too long when you have to go to work and face, you know, 100-person crew and you have to give them direction and... You know, it's, but we don't, like, by the time we've gotten to the point of, like, being on set and working together, we've worked out a lot of the wrinkles and the arguments, so, because we have to fight, we're like a unified front, you know, there's a lot of fighting, you know, arguing.
I was going to say, I'm sure the whole army can sense the general's tension
if you bring it.
How'd you make the transition from videos to long form?
You know, we did commercials and videos, and the studio started to take an interest in video directors, and we got a lot of early offers, but it took Little Miss Sunshine, the script really hooked us,
took five years to get that made.
You know, but we take a long time to make our films. It's
now that our kids are out of the house, it's a little easier.
Is that the case?
So now we can kind of travel to work, and we don't need to make as we're almost out of college, so then we'll not have to earn so much money.
Oh, you're the lucky. Then they're not coming home.
I don't know. We'll see.
All right.
We'll see.
I was thinking, let Olive be Olive.
Oh, very good. I'm impressed.
That's one of my parody roles. I was thinking, is it an advantage or does it complicate things to have worked with an actor before?
Steve Carell, it's an advantage.
It's great. Yeah. You have a shorthand. Because working with, you know, it always takes a little while to get to know what an actor needs on the set. And working with Steve before was great. And
we would try to find a project we could do together for the 10 years it took between the two movies. But... I mean, it could be a disadvantage, but we haven't experienced that.
And, you know, he was the perfect guy for the role. And, you know, he plays tennis, and he trained for 4 months.
He trained for four months with Lorne Cool.
Oh, that's right.
So Lorne not only taught him Bobby's game, but he taught him about Bobby the man.
So many amazing stories about Bobby. I mean, that was another thing I think that surprised us about this story. As we looked into Bobby's story, just what a fascinating character he was and what a character he was. And, you know, clearly a really talented, smart guy. And, you know, just happened to be a really great showman, you know, hustler.
You know, I mean, people forget that. They think he's this degenerate gambler. He was a great player.
He was a great player.
And Billy Jean knew that more than anyone.
Right.
Yeah.
You know. I feel like you see Michael Scott with a forehand. I was joking. It felt like Michael Scott with a forehand, but then he sort of rounded into a much fuller character.
Well, you know, it's hard because, you know, Bobby. Michael Scott has a lot of Steve in him. So there's always going to be that comparison. But he's also a very transformative actor.
He could watch, you know, all those press conferences, playing with the lion chained to his arm, you know.
There's a lot of
footage and a lot of stuff he could study of Bobby, and you know, I think he really captured Bobby, but there's still some Steve in there too.
I was talking to Emma about it, and she said, you know, with Billie Jean, she's a strong personality and still very much a presence, but I also wanted to remember I was not dealing with a 70-something-year-old woman. I was a 28-year-old. How did you sort of keep this distance, but also not exclude her?
We all met with Billie Jean at different times, and we loved getting to talk to her about this period, but we very quickly realized that Billie Jean at 73 is fully formed, and this was a time in her life where there was so much confusion, and she used the word confused, you know, a lot when she talked about these period. So at a certain point, we kind of had to just...
take the evidence. Look at the
step
evidence,
away
but
and,
not, you know, talk to her as much.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's a key moment in the broadcast when Billie Jean's won, and she's not happy. There's no joy
on
her
face. Yeah.
And that was really interesting.
Or even relief. It wasn't really like, it's over. You know, she just seemed
that,
sort of
that was
still,
because of what?
I think,
well,
the,
I think
the personal
so,
tension?
I think there were so many things going on in her. And, you know, while it was a momentary victory, I think she felt like there was so much more ahead. And, I mean, I
she
who
was
knows?
Still, she was still unhappily married.
Right,
she
right.
Had, you know, there's a lot more to the story than we tell. We end it right there, and there's... so much that happened after, but I feel like you get a sense of that, what she was facing.
There's that one line, they're so happy they have $7,000 in purses. People
per
can't
match.
See where we're but people, you know, this we're saying the winner, U.S. Open winner, gets almost $4 million at the Billie Jean King Tennis Center with I mean, you see this monstrosity that we're
what do the women make?
50-50. Totally,
it's the same
parity.
It's the same.
Only,
it's the same. But I know Billie Jean didn't make
$25 million.
No, Billie Jean didn't make that money in her whole career. I heard.
Yeah.
You know. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
It's only fairly recently, right? It's 2010.
That there's parity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It all four majors. But but I wonder what it's like for you to, you make this movie. You're grounded in 1973. You've got pink noses and Eric Sever. I mean, you're seeing
here.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is evidence of how far we've gone, and you know, and yet there'll be a story in the news that suggests that there's still a lot more, you know.
What did I see? 173 years.
It's what they predicted that
before
equal pay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the NBA and the WNBA. You know, there's nothing close to parity there.
Dare I say? No, what? I mean, your industry is not a big
industry.
Oh,
no, absolutely. You know, we paid our actors all the same on this movie. You know, Emma and Steve got the same. But,
is that right?
It's not.
And now there
common.
Are directors like Patty Jenkins, who's the highest paid female director. Right. But not. I'm waiting for the day when it'll be the highest paid director. Will be a woman, you know. We don't have to say female director.
I'll point out the obvious. There is something poetic that you share a household. But,
No, it probably does affect what the movie is. I couldn't venture to say how, but...
I didn't know. So Steve Carell and Emma made the same
amount of
same
money.
Fee.
Yeah.
Same fee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly.
It's called Favored Nations. Right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we had Favored Nations across the board.
Wait, can I geek out with you for 60 seconds?
Yeah, sure.
Tonight.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Wow. That's
Smashing
all-time
Pumpkins?
Great.
Oh, well, thank you.
That
was...
that's going back.
Where did that come from?
Where
did the idea come from?
There's a silent French silent film director.
Right.
Yeah, and so... But you know what was funny is that film or that video happened at the very last minute. We were going to do a Busby Berkeley... musical number and the Red Hot Chili Peppers did one just before, and when we found out about it, we had to completely change what we were doing. So we said to Billy, you know,
we showed him like some little clips.
We showed him a
trip to the moon, and we're like, we think we're going to use it. And then we shot it exactly like, you know, in that same style.
Right,
with a hand crank
camera.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was very fun. I miss that.
I was going to say that's a little bit of a relic, but
yeah, it's a relic.
Yeah.
Now.
Did you? So were you a music video?
I was a music video.
Music fan.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, that's a sensational.
Oh, that was
fun. Well, thank you. But there are some great ones. You know, it was fun when they used to play them on the television. Remember?
Vaguely. I'm trying to think. What's another? No, but I'm trying to think of other directors that got their start that way.
David
and I'm blanking.
Fincher,
yeah, David Fincher.
Spike
yeah,
Jones,
Fincher and Spike.
Michelle Gondry, Michael Bay. I mean,
yeah, we were lucky to be.
What was the Fincher video? It's some completely totally incongruous song.
Stevie Winwood was.
That
was an amazing video.
Right.
I mean, he did tons.
He did a bunch of Madonna videos.
Like Madonna. Paula Abdul, remember her? So going back into the this 90s really is when
that's,
we did most of our
I was going to say, this is a relic of another era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great one. Any other...
fun facts?
No, but any other tennis... I mean, is this...
Well, you know what?
Or does this whole sort of weird subculture intrigue you?
Oh, no, it does. And you know what was fun is that of the original nine, I don't know if I said this, but, you know, in our cast of the original nine, half are actors and half are tennis players. So a lot of the women, you know, in that group
were acting
for the first time. They're real...
They were the players.
They were the real players. Right. So it's kind of cool that they got along so well and
I am thrilled to get to go to the U.S. Open. It's our first time. We've never been. And we used to be members of the Mulholland Tennis Club in Los Angeles.
I know where that is. I know where that is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So we can hit the ball.
We can appreciate it. So we're in awe here.
Yeah.
Congrats. This
thank
was great.
You. Very nice to meet you.
Thank you. Very nice to meet you.
All right, that's our Battle of the Sexes podcast for this week. Again, thanks Billie Jean King, Emma Stone, Jonathan Dayton, Valerie Faris. Obviously, this was all done during the U.S. Open. This was part of the run-up to Battle of Sexes, which premieres September 22nd. And again, I say this with complete and utter objectivity. I thought it was quite good, and Rotten Tomatoes' Jamie Lasanti seems to agree with me. Hmm. Will this get Emma Stone or her second consecutive Oscar? Who knows? But it's worth your $12. How much are movies were you?
Oh my gosh, they're not $12.
Yeah, $16.
It's so much money.
Wait, sidebar. I was just talking about this with someone today. If you could watch a new release in the comfort of your own home, where you knew you had a seat, you didn't have to wait until showtime, you didn't have to sit through 20 minutes of previews, you could drink your own beer, you didn't have to decide whether to go to the bathroom or hold it. I mean, I think this is a new way. I feel like I'm getting old, but I hate going to movies now.
Have you ever heard of a Fire Stick?
You got to cut this podcast for the middle-aged man response. What's a Fire Stick?
We'll talk about it later. I don't think it's not illegal. Maybe it's like sort of legal.
Like the way I saw Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather,
sort of like that.
I'm just saying. I sound like an old man when I say this. Going to the movies is becoming an increasingly less pleasant experience. I like movies. I like TV. I would happily pay a premium to watch these things without having to leave my home. Anyway, go see Battle of the Sexes. It's really quite good. It gives you a sense of what I think you come away with, obviously, a new sense of Billie Jean King. It's got some good tennis history. It puts today's WTA tour in perspective. Again, we talk about here are women scratching and clawing for a purse of $7,500, and now Sloane Stephens makes $3.7 million. All right, that does it for this week. Go to the movies and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher. Richard Deitch always says that we need to say leave a comment. I'm not sure what that means, but anyway, thanks to all of our guests. Thanks to you, Jamie Lasanti, our trusty producer. We will have a new guest next week. Have a good week, everyone. We'll be right back.